Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats. Welcome once again. It's been a crazy week for Sports Beat, with the South Bend Cubs playing a pair of doubleheaders in some earlier games than usual at Lake County, but the Cubs actually played earlier today. We'll tell you what happened there coming up in a little bit. I'm Sean Stiers in for Darren Pritchett because Darren is now with the game today. He is headed to Fort Wayne with the South Bend Cubs for a game tomorrow night. So we've got that. Eric Hansen and I have a lot coming up for you. Tom Noy joins me in the second hour of the show tonight as well. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. A lot to cover in today's show, including some news regarding one of Notre Dame's starting linebackers. We will get to that here in just a minute. South Bend Tribune Notre Dame recruiting insider Tyler James joins us for the recruiting update at 5:30 here, about 22 minutes or so here on WSBT. Eric Hansen's My Five Question of the Day later this hour. The five position groups with the most upside heading into the 2018 season. We'll see what Eric has to say about that. Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy joins me for the second hour of the show. We'll get an update on what's going on with Fighting Irish basketball as we kind of head into the summer months. A big group of freshmen will be on campus here sooner than later. We'll also talk about a proposal that came out of the ACC spring meetings today to expand the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Get Tom's thoughts on that. NBA playoffs, rapid fire, and more. That is all coming up in the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Start with a note today. Former Notre Dame baseball player and South Bend Silverhawk A.J. Pollock is going to be out for 4 to 8 weeks with a broken left thumb. A.J. leads the Diamondbacks, the Arizona Diamondbacks, with a .293 batting average, 11 home runs, and 33 RBIs. He was an all-star in 2015, but he hasn't played more than in 112 games in a season since then because of injuries. Pollock missed all but 12 games in 2016 after fracturing his elbow after a headfirst slide at home in the team's last exhibition game right before the season started. And then he missed nearly 2 months with a groin injury last year. He's set to become a free agent after this season, but a third consecutive season with an injury to A.J. Pollock, who has become one of the big stars in baseball when he is healthy. He is right there with anyone, and I think you'd have to say, I mean, it's only the middle of May, but the way he was playing and considering how good the Arizona Diamondbacks have been, you'd have to consider him in the MVP conversation right now. So tough luck for A.J. Pollock. Again, the former Notre Dame, former South Bend Silverhawk, and current Arizona Diamondback outfielder is out for at least a month and possibly up to 2 months with a broken left thumb that he suffered trying to make a catch in the outfield a couple of nights ago. South Bend Cubs fell to Lake County 7-0 in their series finale earlier today. The two teams split the 6-game set with 3 wins each. The Cubs are now off to Fort Wayne. They will start a 3-game weekend series there tomorrow night, game here on WSBT. They'll be home next week to start an 8-game homestand after that. Joined by South Bend Tribune Indy Insider Eric Hansen. How are we doing today, Eric Hansen?
Eric Hansen is doing fine, thank you.
All right. Let's do third person all day. No, I'm kidding. I guess the most important question for you is, Laurel or Yanni, have you done that yet?
I don't even know what that is.
You don't even know what that is? Okay. Well, it's too hard to explain, so I will just avoid that.
Okay.
All right. The news coming out earlier today about a Notre Dame football player, Tavon Coney. Interesting to say the least. He's headed to court nearly 2 years after his marijuana arrest, according to the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. The Notre Dame linebacker is going to be in court both on May 31st for a pretrial conference in Rochester, Indiana. This is in Fulton County Superior Court. So May 31st for a pretrial conference and August 1st for a court date there, a bench trial that is scheduled there. And now this had kind of all seemed like it had been gone, but now it comes back up. Coney apparently, after a plea agreement was withdrawn in a 2016 marijuana possession case against him, Coney's lead attorney said that he couldn't comment on the case, saying that it's only that it's, quote, an old case, end quote, and said that Coney has never been sentenced. Fulton County Prosecutor Michael Marr's office referred the News Sentinel to court documents. And so the case stems from the misdemeanor charge from an incident in which Coney was in a vehicle with a group of other Notre Dame players when it was stopped by the police on the evening of August 19th, 2016. And he was part of the group that was charged with marijuana possession. Last October, Coney, who's a first-time offender, was ordered to probation for a drug screen. But in December, the court rejected a plea and a sentencing hearing was canceled. A change of plea hearing was conducted in March, but on April 30th, Coney asked to withdraw a plea agreement based on the results of the testing in April of 2018, which obviously is just last month, according to the joint motion filed and was rescheduled for the August 1st bench trial. The court records did not specify what those results were. So again, that is from the News Sentinel in Fort Wayne. And have you been able to kind of look at this at all, Eric, today?
I looked at it last night and I made some calls today, and the two people that could really clear it up, either the prosecuting attorney, assistant prosecuting attorney Michael Marrs, and Mr. I can't remember his attorney's name, Tavon Coney's attorney's name.
Rodolfo Sigfrido Monterosa Jr.
Monterosa.
Yes.
He did not answer calls today regarding this. Here's the deal. I think that this blew up probably bigger than it needed to be. Really, the key court date is the one at the end of May. He's had a bench trial scheduled for this before. This is just what happens when you want to get, you know, a plea agreement. At some point, you got to start the clock, and the bench trial being scheduled. So there was one canceled last September. I hate to speculate here. I'll talk more in general terms. What I think that could happen in a case similar to this is that you get tested for marijuana at different times when you have a case such as this. And if you have a positive test, then sometimes a pretrial diversion option isn't available to you anymore. You can still plead guilty and have a misdemeanor on your record. But what happens is sometimes people want to challenge the test. For example, if you, and I hope my attorney's not driving off the road right now, and it's Spence Walton from May Oberfell and Lorber, and he's awesome. But what happens sometimes, kids will overhydrate to try to beat a marijuana test.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're an athlete, you may be overhydrated because that's what you have to do as an athlete is hydrate if it happened, let's say, during spring practice. So you may feel like that's a false positive. So you may want to pull back. That could be a possible reason, and I don't know that for sure. I sure want to get to the bottom of it. But that could be a reason Tavon Coney and his attorney may say, hey, look, we don't want to do this plea agreement without an option to have a pretrial diversion, meaning at some point if you keep your nose clean, then this goes away from your record as it's as if it never existed. Mm-hmm. So the bench trial being scheduled for a couple days before fall practice starts, I doubt it ever gets to that. I think that there will be negotiations at some point and possibly a resolution at this May 31st hearing. The problem is when you look at Tavon's case, and again, based on if he's in the state, you know, May 31st, is he going to be back? You know, the veterans come back and start their 4-for-40 curriculum on June 3rd. So is he still going to be in Florida? Do they have to file a continuance? If you look at this case online, the case summary, there are a zillion continuances in
really?
This case.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're scheduling around games, you're scheduling in practices, classes, and so forth like this. What the story didn't make clear, real clear, it kind of implied that it was Tavon's choice to pull back on the plea agreement. If that's the case, then, you know, the scenario that I explained could be one possible reason. But it's really difficult. Again, we're talking about a marijuana misdemeanor charge here. So I don't think his 2018 season is in jeopardy. And if, you know, the bench trial on August 1st didn't fit into what's going on, his lawyer could certainly ask for continuance and have this happen after the season. So I think a lot was made of this without having all the ducks in a row. And it's hard. If the lawyer's not calling you back and the prosecuting attorney says, look at the court documents, you look at this court document and you print that out on your printer, and I did last night, you're killing a couple of trees.
It sounds like it. Well, and if all this rescheduled
pre-trial conference motion for...
We kind of lost my mic there for a second. We had a computer glitch. If all this rescheduling is going on, then his name is going to show up if it gets rescheduled. So if a guy is down there checking that beat, it could appear new to them, essentially,
right.
But it's just a reschedule continuance
right.
type thing.
The original bench trial in this case was scheduled for September 27th, 2017, which would have been in the middle of last season.
Right.
And then it ended up getting canceled. And then there were change of plea hearings and orders issues and hearing scheduled activity and motions and continuances and briefs filed. I mean, this thing goes on forever. You would think after 2 years they could get something done here, and maybe that'll get done at the end of May. But I think the interesting thing is that it's gone on for almost 2 years, but
right.
there's got to be an end in sight. And again, just because a bench trial is scheduled doesn't mean it's actually going to happen.
All right.
Okay, good. My lawyer didn't
Thank
text
you.
Me.
Thank so. You, Cops and Courts reporter Eric Hansen.
That was my beat at the Ohio State paper was Cops and Courts.
Yeah, I had one of those a long time ago when I was first starting out as well. It's one of those. Again, it's that you have to be, like, all these different things come through, and a lot of times you have to know what you're looking for, and then other times You just happen upon something. It's like, oh, here's a guy, and I know this name, and so now
right.
I'm going to start looking into this.
You almost have to go to the May 31st hearing. The problem is, you know, you got to make sure that stays on because, mm-hmm. okay, what if he's not back from Florida yet? Okay, let's continue this till June what?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Okay, so good insight on that, and now we'll just kind of have to wait and see if this
yeah.
does actually happen on May 31st or if it's pushed back again.
Right. I don't see that. I mean, I'm curious what will happen at the next hearing, but I don't see this as a threat to his whether he's going to be eligible to play in the
okay.
2018 season.
Which right now is the most important thing that I think most fans want
right.
to know. What exactly is this going to mean? All right. He's Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football insider. I'm Sean Steyers. Darren Pritchett traveling with the South Bend Cubs from Lake County up a little bit northeast of Cleveland to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Tyler James will join us for a recruiting update here in just a few minutes. I wanted to get to a couple little things, Eric, because again, what fans want to know, and a couple different questions. We're sitting here. This is graduation weekend coming up this weekend. So we're officially getting ready to head into the summer. And as you said, June 3rd is when those veterans come back and they're going to begin their work over at Notre Dame. So a question that keeps popping up is, how do the Irish get to the scholarship limit of 85? They're sitting at 87 right now. So just kind of some of your thoughts on how they're going to get there, Eric.
Well, I think there's a few things that can happen. One is, you know, they just went through finals week. So not sometimes people don't
wait and see.
Yeah, sometimes people don't do well on the finals, you know. And some of them go into summer still needing a grade. Remember Alize Mack from a couple of years ago when he was Alize Jones, you know, he had to get it done in the summer. He didn't, and then he was ineligible for the season. So they usually know if there's somebody that's borderline there. There's also some congestion at some positions. You know, you can look at the scholarship chart we have at ndinsider.com, and you can see there are players that have gotten leaped over at linebacker and maybe at safety as well, where, you know, even wide receiver, where you could say, okay, there may be somebody that looks at this and says, you know, I'm never going to play. Mm-hmm. You know, there are true freshmen ahead of me. I might transfer. There's also a couple players that have some chronic injuries where maybe retiring from football makes sense. And in that case, they stay on scholarship at Notre Dame, but they can never play sports again at the NCAA level. They can't a year from now say, I'm cured, and go transfer to Temple and play for them. So I don't think, especially this close, that it's going to be an issue.
Okay. So it'll figure itself out, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, we've been in this, again, the time that they have to get to 85 is the first day of classes for fall semester, which is some point in August. I don't have it in front of me, but so it's into fall camp a couple weeks before they start classes.
Okay. So that is that. Now the other question, now this would kind of go against a little bit what we just talked about, but the other question that I keep seeing pop up from fans and in different places, there are a lot of people who are still holding out hope that either CJ Holmes or Deion McIntosh or both, I guess, might come back to bolster the running back position. They were obviously both dismissed from the team this offseason. So do you see any chance that either one of those guys is on the roster in August?
I don't see that as promising for either one of them. When, you know, I asked Brian Kelly repeatedly about it during the spring and also, you know, just from what I'm hearing, it didn't look like there was a path back for either one of them. Mm-hmm. Now, I think of the two, McIntosh maybe would have the clearer chance to come back. But again, if you're at 87 trying to get down to 85, you know, and you've got some deserving walk-ons too, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And are either of those guys going to, first of all, be the kind of guys you want in your locker room? Secondly, are they going to be better than what you have on your roster? So I know that there's people that have speculated about Dexter Williams' status,
right.
And I can't answer what that's going to be, but because I don't have anything on the record, but, you know, they could be thin at the running back position at the beginning of the season, but I think they feel comfortable with Tony Jones Jr. and Jafar Armstrong and Avery Davis and the two freshmen. I'm not sure where CJ and Deion would fit into that depth chart. Certainly they're not better than Tony Jones Jr. or Dexter Williams. So I just don't see a way back for either one of them, especially with the scholarship crunch.
Right.
We'll have a chance to talk to Brian Kelly in early June, and I'll revisit it then, but I haven't heard rumblings that either one is going to be back.
All right. Sounds good. So that answers a couple of different questions.
Okay.
That, again, the ones that kind of keep popping up, because it seems, and I know we've talked about it on this show before, but no matter what, those are the ones that kind of keep resurfacing.
Sure.
So I just wanted to address it a little bit again as we get here kind of into this transition period with the team getting ready to kind of go home, as you said, for a couple of weeks and then reconvene in June to get their summer work started. We are going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll get a recruiting update from Tyler James. We are brought to you by Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartandVascular.org. By Blackthorn Golf Club. By Laven Insurance, the agency that rocks. CY at LavenInsurance.com. It is coming up on 27 minutes after the hour, along with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Stiers. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader recruiting update, coming up right after this.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Sean Stiers, of course, in for Darren Pritchett, but Eric Hansen is here, and Tyler James is with us on the phone. Tyler, I have the most important questions you've probably heard in weeks coming up at the end of this recruiting update, but I'm going to start with
I'm
going to start with a recruiting question, of course, for you here, and of course you can read all Tyler's stuff at IndyInsider.com. Now there is a big announcement coming up Saturday from a defensive end whose name I will let you say, and you can tell us if you think that he's going to pick the Irish as well.
Yeah, Nana Osafo-Mensa is a defensive end out of Fort Worth Nolan Catholic High School. 6'4", 231 pounds, announcing on Saturday between Notre Dame and Texas. And as it looks now, I think it should be good news for the Irish, which would be a big gain for Notre Dame. He's a four-star recruit. 24/7 Sports has him as the number 5 weak side defensive end, number 69 overall in the 2019 class. And according to 24/7 Sports rankings, that would make him the highest-ranked Notre Dame commit. Jacob Lacy is currently the highest ranked, according to 24/7 Sports, at number 118 overall. And Rivals has him as the number 6 outside linebacker, number 160 overall. So he's played an outside linebacker, can play defensive end. Obviously, that's what he would be playing at Notre Dame. Has added some weight in the last year and could really be the pass rush threat that Notre Dame is always looking for on the recruiting trail. And to beat Texas for him would be important. So hopefully, if I'm right, that'll be how it works out for Notre Dame.
Of course you're right. You're off Saturday. That's when these commits happen, is when you're off.
That is exactly right.
So I would assume you're working Monday, and another decision is coming Monday from linebacker Brandon Smith. What are Notre Dame's chances with him?
Yeah, and because I am working, I think Notre Dame has less of a chance there. So Brandon Smith is a linebacker out of Virginia who Notre Dame has really put a lot of effort into trying to get, but I don't think it's going to go Notre Dame's way. He is a very highly rated guy, borderline five-star recruit, 6'4", 223-pound product of Loayza County High School out in Virginia. He's going to announce at 5 p.m. Eastern on Monday at his high school. He hasn't necessarily listed a group of finalists, but I'm expecting Penn State, Texas A&M, Ohio State, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, or Michigan to be one of the winners, and most likely Penn State. He visited Penn State earlier in the month, earlier in April, visited Texas A&M, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State. It's a guy that Clark Lee would like to add at linebacker, but I think that he'll probably stay closer on the East Coast than heading over to Notre Dame.
Notre Dame football recruiting update with South Bend Tribune, Indy Insider Tyler James. Okay, now a cornerback, Salim Turner Muhammad. He put the Irish in his top 5, and he's got an announcement coming up pretty soon. So who do you think is the favorite there for Turner Muhammad?
Yeah, we have a coming soon, no exact date for Salim, who's actually teammates with Litchfield Ajavon, the safety committed to Notre Dame. His top 5 is Notre Dame, Stanford, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Boston College. I do think Stanford ends up winning that recruitment. He made his announcement of a top 5 and a commitment coming soon shortly after visiting Stanford. So usually, if you're reading between the lines, usually when news like that comes out shortly after a visit, usually the kid ends up going to the school that he recently visited. So we'll see if that becomes the case. Notre Dame is certainly looking to add at least one or two more corners to the class in addition to KJ Wallace. But I don't know that they'll be able to put together two teammates from Episcopal High School out in Virginia when it comes to Salim Turner Muhammad and Litchfield Ajavon.
Well, when it comes to recruiting in top lists, 8 is my maximum. And Kyron just beats the deadline there with 8. If he had had 9, I wouldn't ask this question. He put Notre Dame in his top 8. And can you tell us a little bit about him as a running back and what Notre Dame's chances might be of eliminating the other 7?
Yeah, Kyron is a very versatile running back, good runner, and also a good receiver as well. I think I originally thought he was a receiver back when he was on campus last summer for the Irish Invasion. I think he had played more receiver as a sophomore, but rushed for 922 yards and 22 touchdowns as a junior, so got a lot of running back work. 5'10", 187 pounds out of St. John Vianney High School in Kirkwood, Missouri, just outside St. Louis. And so that is Notre Dame's, I think, probably best chance of landing a running back in the 2019 class currently. The Irish are joined by Missouri, Michigan, Stanford, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, and Michigan State on that top 8. So we'll have to see what his decision timeline looks like if he'll get back on campus. He's been on campus a couple times already. So Notre Dame in a decent spot there, ranked as the number 22 running back in the 2019 class by 24/7 Sports and number 50 wide receiver, according to Rivals.
Tyler, Notre Dame has done really well with offensive linemen in this class. They've already locked up some really good ones. And now another one, Salim Wormley, is going to announce his decision. He's got his date set for July. So does the fact that he has already set that date, does it put more pressure on his official visit to Notre Dame coming up next month in June?
Yeah, I think so. I think he probably feels pretty good about where he stands with if you make a decision day, you probably have a good idea of what that decision would be, even though you may have some more visits lined up. And he's made a few visits to Penn State, so I think they've sort of set the bar in terms of his recruitment, and Notre Dame would have to sort of surpass that with an official visit in June. And certainly that could happen. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. Notre Dame, like you mentioned, has had success along the offensive line recruiting with already 3 commits, and Andrew Kostofic, John Olmstead, and Quinn Carroll. Looking to add 1 or 2 more, and Salim is towards the top of the list of top of the wish list. They also did recently add an offer to Walter Rouse out of Washington, D.C. So I think it could be an indication that Notre Dame is kind of preparing to have some more options in case things didn't go their way with guys like Salim Wormley.
Okay, Tyler, and wide receiver signee Braden Lindsey, who arrives on June 17th, is running for some state titles this weekend in Oregon. What are the events he's listed in, and what are the chances of him having a bunch of gold or silver hanging around his neck?
Well, he is the 2-time defending champion in the 400, so you have to like his chances in winning that race. He ran a 48.46 this past weekend at the Three Rivers League District Championship, the last tune-up before the state championship. He'll also be running in the 200, where he ran a 21.62. He's seated as the number 3 seed in terms of heat times with both the 200 and the 400. And he's also going to be running in the 4x1 relay and the 4x4 relay. And his teams are seated 2nd in both of those races. So I think some good chances for him to come home with some medals there. We'll see how that works out for him. Prelims start on Friday with the finals on Saturday. So that'll be taking place at the University of Oregon. Obviously, a school that Braden's familiar with, as he was once committed to Oregon, but has decided to come to Notre Dame and play football and also run track here.
Pretty historic track venue as well. Okay, now I promised you the hard-hitting questions here at the end, Tyler.
All right.
You still watch The Americans, correct?
I do watch The Americans, correct.
On FX, did you watch last night?
I have not watched last night, okay, unfortunately.
I don't have any spoilers coming, but
okay.
I didn't realize this. At the end of the episode, though, they said there are basically 2 more episodes remaining in the entire series.
Uh-huh.
So,
right.
So we're down to the last 2 episodes of The Americans. And if you've never watched The Americans, it's essentially, Eric, did you ever see the movie Little Nikita by any chance?
I'm sorry. I did see Cars 3 and The Secret Life of Pets. These are the kind of movies I go to.
All right. Well, The Americans, it's set in the 1980s during the Cold War. And so you've got a couple of Russian spies who are living their lives as Americans in the D.C. area. Right across the street from them is an FBI agent. They're friends with him and all this stuff. So my question to you, Tyler James, with two episodes remaining, for you, three episodes remaining, but for everybody else, too, who is most likely to die in the final two episodes?
Agent
Philip or Elizabeth? And there's nothing
that's
last
tough.
Night. There's nothing last night that would give this away or anything.
If you don't answer quickly, we will ask you the Dancing with the Stars question.
Oh no,
hard hitting than that.
I have an answer. I think that Philip will be the one who dies.
Really?
But I don't know. It's very intense. I'm curious to see how it works. Last season wasn't great, and I think we've talked about that off the air before.
Yeah.
That I didn't love last season, but this season has really picked up and. Bump the drama back up, and
right.
I'm kind of interested to see how it ends. And certainly, I think maybe a family member could die as well, and not just either Philip or Elizabeth. So I'm curious to see how everything plays out.
It's all coming to a head. I'm gonna say Elizabeth dies, and that Philip is the one remaining at the end.
All right.
Last question for you: will Agent Beeman's girlfriend turn out to be a spy as well? That's what
She seems pretty fishy. That's been weird. I would say I would lean towards yes, although it's kind of surprising that we haven't learned of anything with that yet.
That's what I keep thinking. But at the same time, her role is essentially, she's got this small part, but it's essentially, is she a spy or isn't she? That's what the whole thing is leading to. So I'm going to say she's something. Maybe I started wondering, is she an American FBI agent already who's checking in on Stan? I don't know, but
maybe. I don't know.
All right, so we've got that to look forward to. Two episodes remaining. Thank you very much, Tyler.
All right, see you guys.
All right, take care. We'll talk to you next week. Tyler James, South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football recruiting insider. It is coming up on 43 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, Eric's My Five Question of the Day, where he tackles much more pressing Notre Dame football topics. And today's My Five, the five Notre Dame position groups with the most upside heading into 2018. Eric will answer that when we return. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My Five Question of the Day for Eric Hansen. The five Notre Dame position groups with the most upside heading into the 2018 season. And Eric Hansen, we will start with number five.
Well, you know, it was hard to do just upside, so I kind of did what I think will be the best five.
Okay.
Because, like, safeties has some upside, but they're not going to be, I still don't think, one of the top. Same with wide receivers, but I went with quarterbacks at number five.
Okay.
I think that they are going to improve. They improved in the spring. I think the addition of Phil Jurkovec is going to make that group even better. But I think it's still going to be better at the top. I think that's going to be an improved group.
Number four.
I'm going to go with offensive line. You still have some really good talent there, even though you lost two first-round draft choices. And Harry Hiestand, I still think, you know, last year the offensive line group was number one. This group is number four, but I still think that's a very strong group with the potential to get better as Liam Eichenberger, left tackle, gets better.
Yep, I agree. Number three.
You know, this is based on the spring and not at the end of the last year, and it's the defensive line. And I think if they had a Jay Hayes back, you'd maybe even move him up a line on here. I think they're going to be really good against the run with Jerry Tillery. If Jonathan Bonner is healthy, I think, again, that's another plus. If he's not, they have some really good young defensive linemen in the interior. They're going to be very good. You know, they got to show up in the pass rush. Keep your eye on Julian Okorah in that area.
Number two.
Tight end U is what Notre Dame likes to call themselves, and tight ends they have. They have them in quality and quantity. When Nick Wisher is possibly your four-string tight end, you've got a really deep tight end group. Now, Alize Mack has got to come and play and be a consistent guy. He can't be, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to change my life and then doesn't do it on right. the field. He really faded last season.
Eric's top five position groups for Notre Dame heading into the 2018 season. Number five, the quarterbacks, which you think is going to keep improving and get even better with the addition of freshman Phil Dracovic coming in this fall. Number four, the offensive line, despite the losses of a couple of top 10 draft picks just a few weeks ago. Number three, the defensive line. Number two, the tight ends. And the top position group heading into 2018, Eric.
I'm going to go with cornerbacks, even though they lost Nick Watkins to an impending grad transfer. I think those four guys that are in their two deep rotation are really strong, and I think then there's four freshmen. I mean, when you can move Houston Griffith out of that position group and lose Nick Watkins and still say, wow, who's going to start? Who's the best two? You know, I think we're going to see a lot more press coverage, a lot more aggressiveness from that group this year. And part of that is because the safeties have improved.
Absolutely. All right. So that is today's My Five question of the day with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. It's Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Stiers. Darren Pritchett will be back tomorrow. He is traveling from just north of Cleveland to Fort Wayne, Indiana with the South Bend Cubs. They played earlier today, dropped the series finale at Lake County. Some breaking news coming this afternoon. Pete Byrne from WSBT-TV tweeted this just a little bit ago. Eric Brand is stepping down as the boys basketball coach at South Bend Riley High School. Pete saying that multiple sources tell WSBT that Brand is leaving Riley to take a coaching position near Indianapolis. That, of course, is where he was an assistant before coming to Riley this past season. The Wildcats had a spectacular regular season. They finished undefeated in the regular season, won the sectional championship, won the regional championship. Brand's team featured three seniors that are going to play Division I next season. Demise Anderson, who will play at Indiana, Shamar Dillard, who's going to Western Illinois, and Rylan Grundy, who just recently announced that he is going to IPFW in Fort Wayne. Anderson, of course, was also a finalist for Indiana's Mr. Basketball Award. Brand, his one-year record at Riley, 26-1. He informed the Riley basketball team of his decision earlier today. WSBT-TV, and again, this from Pete Byrne, not able to reach Brand today, but he is the second South Bend boys coach to resign this offseason. Delray Brooks stepped down at Clay. Recently, Riley High School will have its third different coach in as many seasons next year. So, big news with Eric Brand stepping down. He was a career assistant and came in, took the job this year, and now Eric Brand is apparently heading back to the Indianapolis area to continue his coaching career. So, Mark Johnson, of course, who was the longtime Riley coach, not this year, but the year before, is going to be the head coach at South Bend St. Joseph next year. And he was part-time teacher there this past season. So he will be back in action on the sidelines next season.
And I was nodding the whole time, which plays very well on radio.
Eric, yes. Yes, you are correct. All right, we are about 7 minutes away from the top of the hour here on WSBT. Take a timeout. Back to wrap up the first hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat right after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, we have all kinds of high school tennis sectional action tonight, including at Leaper Park with St. Joe hosts and the Penn Tennis Sectional. We'll also have the results from the Penn Boys Track and Field sectional. Mike Varell has a really cool story on Notre Dame linebacker Jordan Jenmark Heath's journey from Sweden to the United States to play football. And of course, there's much, much more.
All right. Sounds good to me. And we were talking earlier in the hour, Eric, one of the top stories that we started off with earlier today was Notre Dame linebacker Tavon Coney. He has an August 1st bench trial scheduled in Fulton County Superior Court, and he also has a pretrial scheduled for later this month, May 31st. And you were looking through this whole thing. I know there's a lot to go through, but how would you best summarize what's going on with Tavon Coney right now?
How I would best summarize it is that, you know, this is a case that's going on for the better part of 2 years. There's been a lot of continuances. You know, I think that they want to get to a plea agreement that makes sense for everybody. There is a bench trial right now scheduled for August. That would be the third time a bench trial has been scheduled with this case. Another one would have been September 22nd of 2017. Another one just this past April 11th. So I wouldn't read too much into it. You know, I think that they just want to get to the end of this where both sides are happy, and I would be really surprised if this got to a bench trial, meaning the judge does this rather than a jury.
Well, and something you and I were talking about in the break right before we came back is that Coney is actually the one who asked to withdraw the plea agreement that he had set up in Fulton County.
Right, and I'm looking at that right here on the court document. So, again, I think, you know, people wonder how does this affect Notre Dame's 2018 season. I expect this to be the book to be closed on this. But some of these cases, Max Redfield's dragged on for a while. Some of them were, Kevin Stefferson got re-involved because he had other infractions. But, you know, some of them were dealt with very quickly, and sometimes it just drags on. And this is one that particularly drags on a long time.
All right. And as Eric was saying earlier, he's talking about looking at the documents online, and there is a long list of court dates scheduled, canceled, rescheduled. So this has not been uncommon. There have been a lot of these dates, and we are going on now 2 years. It'll be 2 years on August 19th that Coney was part of that group of four players who were arrested on the misdemeanor marijuana charge in Fulton County. All right, Tom Noy joins us in the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We'll talk a lot of hoops with Tom in the second hour, including the ACC voting to make a proposal to the NCAA to expand the NCAA basketball tournament. Talk to Tom, get his thoughts on that, and much, much more coming up in the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Thank you very much, Eric Hansen.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Eric Hansen, Sean Steyer's W.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Steyer's and Tom Noy.
It's the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, and it's
Buckle Up Hour.
Runner's World Magazine.
Oh, come on.
In the break.
Seriously? We're talking sunburst.
That's right. It's coming up.
We got runners here. We don't have to talk football all the time.
That is very true. We've got a lot of basketball planned for the second hour of Sports Beat tonight.
John, producer John, is running the half marathon at Sunburst, which I ran last year for the fourth time in my running career.
Very nice.
Look, it's free for a South Bend Tribune employee. It'd be crazy not to take advantage of that. It's great getting up at like 4 in the morning and then getting downtown. Start running early, and then you finish.
That runner's buzz and all that.
Yeah, you're finished. You're finished by, I forget what time the half marathon started last year, 6:30. So you're finished by like 8:30. Done.
Date of,
you got
date
the rest
of the sunburst
of the
this year? Do you know?
What's that?
The date of the sunburst?
First Saturday in June. So that's what, the third, maybe?
Third
or second? One of those.
Second. John Corden, our producer from the
is he going
from behind you? Yes, is holding up two.
See, everything's behind me. I can't see. If I got to look at the clock, I got to turn around. It's 6:07.
I was assuming that he wasn't saying that was just a two and not a three pointer back there. So it will be on the second. All right,
he is. So that's that
from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett. Again, traveling from just north of Cleveland to Fort Wayne, Indiana. He'll be back on Sports Beat tomorrow night. South Bend Cubs fell in their series finale at Lake County earlier today. Promised a lot of basketball, and we got some breaking local basketball news in the middle of the first hour of Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat. Eric Brand, according to Pete Byrne, he's the first one I saw reporting this. Pete Byrne of WSB-TV. Eric Brand is stepping down as the boys basketball coach at Riley High School. He leaves after just one season, but a very successful season it was. He went 26-1, got to semi-state before Riley suffered its first and only loss of the season. And it sounds like he is going to go back to the Indianapolis area where he came from to take the job this past season.
Did Pete say what school?
No, the school is not indicated here. But he said, Pete said, the article on WSBT.com says that unable to make contact with Eric Brand.
I have made contact with Eric Brand.
Have you?
Absolutely.
All right. So what can you tell us?
Nothing. He just don't want to talk about it right now. He said, I'll talk to you on Friday.
He informed the team today.
Right.
Okay.
So, not a surprise. He came from the Indianapolis area. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's going back there for family reasons that we don't know of. But, yeah, he went 26-1 this year. But I'd say that was, it was a struggle. Let's put it this way. It was a struggle for him. And for that team to go 26-1, you come in, you're the new coach with all the hullabaloo surrounding Mark Johnson's departure.
Right.
You've got Demezi Anderson, one of the top players in the state. You've got Shamar Dillard.
And not just the hullabaloo with Mark Johnson's departure, but the fact that that program had Mark Johnson as the head coach for a long time. And then
right.
The new system and everything.
And getting to talk to Mark Johnson when he took the South Bend St. Joseph's job, he said, when that core group of seniors came in as freshmen, he said, look, if you stick together and you do things the way you should do them, we're going to have a chance to play for a state championship when you guys are seniors. And they had the chance. They went to semi-state, ran into a really good Carmel team, which is something that happens a lot in whatever sport here in Northern Indiana, especially football. When Penn rolls through Northern Indiana in football and goes down to Indianapolis and plays teams in that region from that conference, the same conference that Riley played, Carmel may not have been the best team in that league, but they that's a really strong league down there, and Riley had no chance that day.
And then the other semi-state, New Albany, which is where Romeo Langford went to school. Who's the team that beat New Albany? Was it Warren?
Warren Central.
Warren Central. Isn't that where Eric Brand is from?
Yes.
Right. So, in any case, so he's from down in that area. So.
But it was, in observing, not speaking with Eric Brand specifically about Riley, but observing Riley's program this year and the success that they had, he had to... You come in, you're the first year coach, you've got a team that's expected to do well, you've got one of the top players in the state. That's not as easy of a job as a lot of people thought it should be.
No,
we'll put it that
because
way.
Because you walk in the door with big expectations right away. And a group of kids who earlier in their careers, I don't know if overachieving is what you would call it, but they went to semi-state as freshmen, correct? And so then they ended up getting back there as seniors.
So not a surprise. I mean, it's disappointing. I remember Eric Brand as a player at Bethel. Covered him then. I covered him last year. Got along pretty well with him. Disappointing because, and this wasn't on the agenda, but we'll talk about it. Just when you think the South Bend School Corporation starts to get some athletic momentum,
right?
You get something like this.
And there's other stuff going on with this, with the Athletic Corporation
too. You've got you've got the momentum of Riley going to the semi-state, and then you take a step backward with the lawsuit with Bill Groves at Adams.
Right.
Now you take another step back because you're losing the most successful boys basketball coach in 1 year that this city has had in a long, long time. So it's just something where it always seems like there's one step forward and two steps back with the South Bend Community School Corporation from an athletic standpoint, like school field. They just started the renovation of school field. That's good news. That's big news. But then on the heels of that, then you have Bill Groves suing the corporation, and then now you have Eric Brand leaving Riley. So now Riley it starts over again with Riley. You've got Riley open. You've got Clay open with Delray Brooks leaving. So it's just something where every good bit of news with the Salpin Community School Corporation from an athletic standpoint, there always just seems to be another round of bad news.
Right. Unfortunately, that is true. So, okay. So again, the story there, Eric Brand stepping down after one season as Riley's boys basketball coach. They'll be looking for now their third coach in as many seasons, which is just in itself saying that is odd considering how successful they've been.
What is it, Notre Dame basketball? I went through three coaches in 3 years, first 3 years on the beat.
That's right.
So it's, and I say it's not a surprise. I think it might have caught a lot of people downtown a little off guard from some of the sources I'm hearing from the last 10, 15 minutes. So okay. I've been on the day that I'm off Twitter doing other, I got a couple of interviews, doing this and doing that. And then I hear about it with Eric Brand with Pete's tweet on the way in. So, but in the 10 minutes that I've been able to contact some people, I'm not surprised. There are some people apparently who are surprised. Yes.
Okay. All right.
So, we'll have more. Probably not tonight because Eric Brand's not going to talk. Eric Brand says he's going to talk to me tomorrow, so I'll probably have something in Saturday's South Bend Tribune.
All right.
From Sounds Eric's good. Perspective.
It is 15 minutes after the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. He's Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Steyers. Let's get to some Notre Dame type stuff. What do you think?
Hoops.
Since you're in here,
I shouldn't
see you
be
once a month at this time of year.
I'm so you shouldn't even see me. Okay, this is how. And Mike Bray says this all the time. This is how fragile a college basketball season is. If Bonzi Colson doesn't get hurt, if Matt Farrell doesn't get hurt, if Notre Dame goes to the NCAA tournament and has some success, Bonzi Colson, for sure, Matt Farrell, probably, and Martin Gebben, maybe, would be in Chicago, and I would be in Chicago right now on the West Side.
That's true.
At the NBA Combine.
I was wondering where you were leading to that.
So I should really, technically, I should not be here.
That.
But because Notre Dame season was such a disaster.
Yeah.
With the injuries and everything else, I'm not at the NBA Combine for the first time in 4 years. I was watching your guy, Devontae Graham, a little bit before I came over here. So it's the NBA Combine's in Chicago, pre-draft camp. Notre Dame's had guys there every year. They do not have anybody there this year. Yeah. Bonzi Colson didn't get invited because of the injury. Matt Farrell didn't get invited, even though he played really well in Portsmouth. And Martin Gebben didn't get invited. So kind of a surprise there.
Well, let's start with Bonzi. Of course, he refractured the foot in the last game, Notre Dame's last game, the NIT game against Penn State. Have you got any update on him and that injury since that happened?
Same time frame as the first one. It was interesting talking with Bonzi Colson the day of the awards, the night of the award ceremony, in that he I don't want to say he fully expected, but he kind of expected this thing to happen again, because when the foot broke, the bone didn't break all the way through. So, like, Bonzi Colson's talking like he's Dr. Bonzi Colson because of all the information and that he's been able to gather through this. So the bone didn't break the first time. It wasn't a complete break. So even though they put the screw in there and thought, okay, it looks like it's okay, because it didn't break all the way through, there was a good chance that the next time it broke, it would be a clean break. And this was a clean break, but so he had the surgery again, another screw put in there. One of the doctors that did both of Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's had this injury three times.
Wow.
The last two times that he's had it, the doctor, a renowned foot surgery, foot surgeon specialist on the East Coast. I want to say he's affiliated with either the Knicks or the Brooklyn Nets. That doctor did Bonzi Colson surgery, and it's the same timetable, 8 weeks.
He did the second one? He didn't do the first one, correct?
He didn't do the first one. Okay. I believe Notre Dame or South, one of the local physicians did the first one.
Right.
But same time frame. Nothing, 8 weeks, walking boot, shed the boot, see what happens.
And we're around 8 weeks right now, right?
No, because he didn't have it. It's May 17th. I want to say he had it early, first or second week in April.
When he had the surgery.
Yeah, he didn't have the surgery. Injury. Yeah, he got it. I know he got hurt, what, late March?
That's what I was trying to find, the date of that last
game. Yeah, it was, St. Patrick's Day.
March 17th. Yeah, exactly.
What am I thinking? I don't know the date because I was...
No, I know. You were at the Riley basketball
game. I went to Riley Semi-State, the first Notre Dame home game I've missed in 20 years.
It all comes full circle.
See, it's today. All, and that was Eric Brand's last game. See, see how that all fits nicely together? But Bonzi Colson put off surgery because he was kind of, all right, what do we do? You know, should I have surgery? What am I going to do? So he finally had surgery mid-April. So this is going to take him right up until the draft. He's basically on the shelf until the draft. Right. So there's slim to no chance that he's going to wind up getting drafted because he can't work out.
And so that leads me to the next question, because we pretty much knew that was probably Bonzi Colson's fate as far as the draft goes because of the injury and because he couldn't, you know, you've got uncertainty with health. But so... with neither Bonzi nor Farrell, and of course Gevin, you can throw in that mix as well.
My MVP.
With them, yeah, that's right. With them not being at the combine this weekend, and none of the mocks that I've seen so far have included any of them. So what is next for these guys as they try to make an NBA roster somewhere down the line?
Get an invite for summer league. Either in Orlando, or now every team in the NBA will have a team in Vegas in July. That's going to be their only avenue as to, and I fully expect Matt Farrell to play summer league. Bonzi Colson, I don't know, because as you move forward, I don't know what the medicals are going to be on him, what his agent is going to tell him. If a team says, we know what you've done, your body of work in the Atlantic Coast Conference at Notre Dame speaks for itself. Why don't you join our summer league team, get to know our system, maybe practice with us. If he's not cleared to play, maybe that team says, we'll give you a guarantee you can come back to preseason camp with us and try to earn a roster spot. So who knows with Bonzi Colson and really with Martin Gebben. I mean, it's just they may get a look, they may not get a look, but I fully expect Matt Farrell to play summer league with some team if he's not drafted, and odds are he's probably not going to wind up being drafted.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Devontae Graham, I think the best I've seen him is like 44th, something like that. And he's at the combine right now.
Well, so. Frank Mason. What was Frank Mason? 40?
He was right around there.
40, yeah. 30. And
he ended up with Sacramento.
He wound up being with Sacramento, got with the Kings. It's all a matter with Matt Farrell and really Bonzi Colson of finding the right fit. Mm-hmm. Like you need to find the right fit, because I was emailing with a Notre Dame fan today where Demetrius Jackson leaves 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 2 years ago, and he's on his third team and he can't find the right fit. Like, great, he's with the Philadelphia 76ers, but he's the fourth point guard. You've got Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, T.J. McConnell, and then Demetrius. There's no future for Demetrius Jackson in Philadelphia.
Right.
There was no future for Demetrius Jackson in Boston as a second-round pick. You thought there was a future with him in Houston once Chris Paul got hurt, and then once Chris Paul got healthy, they said, you know what, we're terminating our contract with Demetrius. So it's so hard with these guys, Sean, to find the right fit, because the window is so small for you to try to get through.
Right.
Because if you don't, You've got the next wave of guys coming in right now.
Yep.
Devontae Graham, Colin Sexton, pick a point guard.
But that's where the summer league helps too, because you get to get out there and actually play and show what you can do.
And I think it'll help Matt Farrell. Like what T.J. McConnell did, Mm-hmm. What J.J. Barea did with his, in all his time with the Dallas Mavericks, they'll look at Matt Farrell and say, too small, can't play. But then you get him out there. Like, I think Matt Farrell's working out for a couple teams next week. You get him out, you get him into those workout situations, and you see what he can do and say, yeah, he's not bad. So maybe it works out for Matt Farrell. Like, he'll get a look.
Right.
And that's what Mike Barea said. That's what I've said the entire year. What happens after that is up to him, up to the team.
So when you say fit, are you talking more about personnel fit, or are you talking about system fit?
Where both. He would fit like in? Style. And what's the roster look like?
What do you see, like, of NBA teams? Is there one that comes to mind where you think that might be the best for a guy like Matt Farrell, and even Bonzi down the line?
Nah, Bonzi, West Coast. Like an up and down system where you're not playing pick and roll.
Right.
It's not a pick and roll grind. It's a West Coast team in a West. When I say West, Western Conference, like the Rockets, like the Warriors, where you play positionless basketball and you just get up and go and you spread the floor, mm-hmm. and you might exploit this matchup here or exploit this matchup there. But if it's a grind of a like an East Coast, like a Celtic, like the Celtics, it's hard to see where guys like that fit because they're so undersized and they're playing with such limitations.
Right. All right. So hopefully it works out. And again, there's months to go.
Not that long.
The draft is what, about a month and a half away?
June 21st, I want to say.
And so a little bit more than a month away. Now, as far as Notre Dame and what's going on here, when do the freshmen start arriving for the Irish?
About a month from, I think it's Father's Day weekend.
Okay.
So they will be on campus mid-June.
Yeah.
And then buckle up, baby, because when they're here, like somebody emailed me today and said, oh, Rex Pfluger, I see Rex Pfluger's doing this on Snapchat and he's doing that on Snapchat. Shouldn't he be in the gym working on his game? And you're like, whoa, you know, these guys have finally gone home after finals last week for the first time since when?
Yeah.
And when they come back, they're basically basketball players until March of 2019, or if the season goes longer, April of 2019. Because this is a huge, huge summer for this basketball program.
I always love that. Because a kid is Snapchatting right. or tweeting at 9, 10 o'clock at night or whatever. Oh, shouldn't he be in the gym 24/7?
Oh, he's got to be working on his game. Look. They need a break eventually.
That's right.
You know, and this is the only break they get basically is 3 weeks. They get to go home and hang out and just kind of decompress because when they come back, and it's in one of your additional questions, but like I said earlier, I can't remember as crucial a summer. Maybe, and I would even put this in, loop this right in there with 2014-15, which was really important for this program coming off 15-17. Mm-hmm. I think this summer might be even more important than what that summer was. That summer you had Pat Connaughton, Jaren Grant. You had two seniors that were really driven to bring this basketball team back to where it needed to be. I don't know.
Now you're losing leaders. Yeah, and you got a lot of young guys coming.
I don't know about what the leadership, what the core senior leadership. Rex Pfluger is the only senior. Okay. Rex has got to be a better player. TJ Gibbs has got to be, I mean, it's TJ and Rex right now, mm-hmm. as the main guys who are leaders, who are leaders off the floor, but also have to produce on the floor. They're not at the Connaughton Grant level.
Well, and this is kind of like, I don't know what Durham's personality is. But
Juwan Durham.
Yeah. You get in here, the transfer, of course, from Connecticut, but mm-hmm. the fact that they'll be together is he someone or who could kind of assume some of that as
you
well?
You can't put that on him because he hasn't played a game yet.
Yeah.
You know, and he's.
I'm just saying the number of veterans are pretty limited. So,
well, you've got to have a guy like Elijah Burns.
Yeah.
Who may or may not be limited this year because of a knee situation.
That's right.
So you've got this freshman class coming in addition to Juwan Durham, with the foreign tour in August of the Bahamas. So it's something where, yeah, maybe when you look at these freshmen coming in, maybe Rex Pfluger should be working on his game because There might be.
At midnight.
At
get in the gym,
Rick. Round the clock.
1 a.m.
Well, 1 a.m., that's only 10 o'clock Southern California time there where he's go. From. So it's only 10 o'clock out there in SoCal.
There you go.
But it's going to be a really, really interesting dynamic of how all this stuff comes together. Because absolutely. As we know Mike Bray, I'm riding my seniors.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm going with my seniors.
Ride.
And that's all I can say because we're late on break. So all right. I gotta shut up.
All right, we got a lot of basketball talk still to come from the NBA playoffs, LeBron, and an ACC proposal that was made today regarding the expansion of the NCAA tournament and some other proposals as well. Get Tom's thoughts on that and more coming up next when we continue. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Update. It is rapid fire time along with South Bend Tribune Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy. I am Sean Stiers and rapid fire.
Trying to find those rapid fire questions over there.
Well, I've got the questions. I've got to read the sponsor. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I'll get that sponsor read in.
That's right. It is brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club. Grab your clubs and get spring savings with Blackthorn Golf Club's Blackthorn card. Right now, it's available for only $99, which gets you 80% off the regular rate to play Blackthorn, including cart every round, every day, all season long. As a Blackthorn card member, on Mondays and Tuesdays, you pay just $29 for greens fees, including cart. Call 574-232-GOLF or visit blackthorngolf.com today. The Blackthorn card, 80% savings only at blackthorngolf.com. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, and again, along with Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune, I'm Sean Stiers. So the big, I don't know about the big, but the other story that as we start off our rapid fire, the ACC has voted to propose legislation to the NCAA that would expand the NCAA basketball tournament from 68 to 72 teams. They essentially want to add a second set of first four games, like the ones they have in Dayton, but they would put the other four in another part of the country. So let's start with that. There are some other proposals as well that we'll get to, but let's start with that, Tom. Do you buy or sell that idea?
Sell it.
Really?
Yeah. You don't need to mess around with that. And you know, this has got Mike Bray's fingerprints all over it. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. Because if it had been expanded, would Notre Dame have gotten in last year?
Absolutely.
Yes. This is why they're doing it. And this is why I think Mike Bray's a big proponent of it. What happens in 20?
It's interesting that you say that because the proposal came from the ACC coaches.
Right. Because
who noted the number of football teams that get more opportunities.
No, that's not it.
That's what the story said.
That's not it. They're wrong with that. ACC meetings in Amelia Island the last couple of days. So that's where this is coming from, or that's why it's coming out now. But I think the ACC coaches are looking at what's coming in 2020. What's coming?
I don't know. New TV contract? I don't know.
Well, yeah, in addition to that. But a 20-game league schedule.
Oh, that's right.
They're looking at the 20-game league schedule and saying, we going to get squeezed in when it comes time for the NCAA tournament by taking two non-conference games? And are they going to look at it and say, 9-9, everybody, the ACC coaches always say, well, if we can get to 9-9, we can get into the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Will they still feel the same if they can get to 10-10? 10-10, I don't know. 10-10, 9-9, it's the same thing.
Right.
But if they want, I guarantee you that the coaches are looking at it and saying, if we're going to 20 league games, it's going to make it that much tougher.
You're already playing in the toughest conference.
Yeah, we're already playing in the toughest. Here's Mike Bray. He's thinking, if we rotate into an A schedule, all of a sudden we've got another repeat opponent. What if our repeat opponents are Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia, and Louisville? Or Louisville, any
not
combination
overly
of those.
Enviable.
No, it's not. So I think the coaches are thinking, we want to protect ourselves to have a little bit more cushion, because if we're gonna play in what is annually the toughest league in the country,
mm-hmm.
it never starts out that way, but once it gets to February, March, everybody's saying, ACC, deepest, most of this, true or false. That's the perception of the ACC. If we're playing in the toughest league and you're going to make us go to 20 league games, why don't you bump it up and get four more teams into the NCAA tournament to give us a little bit more leeway of trying to snag one of those spots.
See, and I don't mind this, and I would actually go a step beyond. I've talked about this before, where you've got all the double-digit seeds, make them all play in games. So all those double digits, because they're obviously the lower seeded teams anyway, just make all those double digit seeds play in games. You can start the tournament on Tuesday, where you've got a lot more games Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you go full fledged on Friday and Saturday like you always do. And so I wouldn't mind that, because I think you have a lot of really even teams in that area anyway when you're looking at the selection process. So why not just make it a few more teams and let all those double-digit seeds have play-in games?
There you go.
Do you like it?
No.
Or are you just agreeing?
I'm just agreeing.
Okay.
Because it's rapid fire. We're not being very rapid with the fire.
Well, you're right about that. There's not much. Now, the other proposals, basically, they proposed going with the rules that they had in the NIT, moving the three-point line back, resetting the shot clock to 20 seconds after an offensive rebound. They didn't necessarily like the quarters. Do you like moving the three-point?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
It opens the floor up.
It'll open the floor even more and make teams maybe a little less reliant on jacking three-pointers. Like, make it – push it out toward the NBA line to where you've got guys that are supposed to be taking three-pointers instead of the other ones. I'm not a big rule stickler guy, but the one rule I don't want to see for college basketball is quarters. I just can't stand quarters. I can't. Everything else is good. The wider lane,
we're good. You watch NBA games.
That's
like
the NBA. But those are also 12-minute quarters.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 10-minute quarter. I got so screwed up watching Notre Dame in its two NIT games and then trying to go back and watch NCAA tournament games and have it be, why is there 17 minutes left? Oh, yeah, we're back to halves. Like, halves are a men's college basketball thing. Just let men's college basketball have halves, and everyone else can have quarters.
I don't like resetting the fouls, but everything else, I don't mind quarters at all. I don't understand why they feel like they have to do that. Okay, next question: if the Boston Celtics beat LeBron James and the Cavaliers, will you be more interested, less interested, or unchanged in your interest in the NBA Finals?
Unchanged, because I'm watching it either way, and it's. I mean, whatever storyline comes out of the East, Boston, Cleveland, it'll be interesting. So I'm watching it, but now I mean, the way the Celtics are playing, they're just nobody's beating Boston.
What do you think about all the praise Brad Stevens is getting? I mean, I think for us in the media, especially, we sit here and we go, there are no stars on that team right now. We obviously there should have been, but Kyrie Irving is hurt.
Al Horford makes $24 million a year or something.
But do you consider him a star?
You better be if you're making $24 million.
He's a good player. So do you think that Stevens is getting too much praise right now for what he's done with
it? Doesn't matter what I think. I think his peers think that, because how many votes did he get for Coach of the Year?
But is that jealousy? Is it sniping?
It's jealousy. I mean, it's like, come on. They're looking at it and saying, it's not like Terry Rozier is really good. Jason Tatum, and I'll go back to this, last year in the ACC championship game at Barclays Center, where he just took apart Notre Dame, I looked at that and I said, Jason Tatum right now is the best player coming out of that draft. He's going pro. Like, he was on his pro kick right there. That's when it started. You could see it. I said, he's the best player in the draft. I would take Jason Tatum number one. Jason Tatum was really good. Terry Rozier, I listened to Rick Pitino when I would do my Louisville previews for Blue Ribbon Magazine, telling me Terry Rozier's a pro. The pros love him. I'm like, Rick, he's only played 1 year. He's like, I'm telling you, they're going to love Terry Rozier in the NBA. He's the prototypical NBA guard. So he's good.
They're all in the NBA, so they're good.
They're good. Like,
are they better than DeMar DeRozan? I mean,
DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll never find that out. But they're better than
that's
the Cleveland.
LeBron dismantled Toronto.
That's LeBron. So Toronto looks at it the same way the Cavaliers used to look at Michael Jordan with Craig Elo and that whole Lenny Wilkins and all those guys. They've got LeBron nightmares. They can't get past LeBron. But this Celtics team is far better than what that collection of clowns at Cleveland has right now.
I completely agree with that.
So it's but just if you think the Celtics are good now, just wait till next year. Like
I know. I mean
that's when we'll see how good of a coach Brad Stevens is, because Jalen Brown, there's another one. Jalen Brown. Yeah. He's the third pick of the draft. If you're the third pick of the draft, you should be doing what you're doing. Maybe not your second season, but next year you've got Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Haywood. If Brad Stevens wasn't the coach of the year this year, he better be the next year, because how are you going to keep all those guys happy? Like Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown, they're going to be like...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can argue that it's almost easier for him right now because you don't have the star set up in the middle of the whole thing, and you don't have to keep the star happy.
You don't. You can just go out and like nobody expected it. Like nobody expected this from Boston, but when you look at their lineup, you say... They're not that. I mean, they're good. They're really good, and they're fun to watch. But you put that lineup on the – you put whatever combination you have, you've still got to go out and make shots. Like Jeff Van Gundy says, it's a make-or-miss league.
Right.
And every time the Celtics take a big shot, you're thinking it's going in. And it usually does, whether it's Rozier or Morris or Al Horford or Aaron Baines. Like, I watched Aaron Baines play in college at Washington State. He's knocking down three-pointers. So it's just – But it's just professional jealousy on other coaches saying Brad Stevens isn't one of the best coaches in the league.
That's what I think.
He's top three.
It is rapid fire, and we got
it's not very rapid.
1.5 questions in rapid fire, I think. So we'll take a timeout.
Already?
That's right. It's 15 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We'll take a timeout, back with more rapid fire brought to you by the Blackthorn Card on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Are coming up on 11 minutes away from the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy. I'm Sean Stiers. We continue rapid fire, brought to you by the Blackthorn Card. I want to ask you this.
Do I have to answer?
Well, you
maybe.
Know, fill in the blank on this one. Because everyone's already talking about it, especially with the Cavaliers down 2-0. The team that makes the most sense for LeBron next year.
That makes the most sense for LeBron next year. The Philadelphia 76ers.
Do you think so?
Yep.
And I
to win now.
Back it up. Okay.
To win now.
Okay.
Now does it make the most sense for if
you're talking about for LeBron, not necessarily
for LeBron to win a championship, if that's what he's in it for, to win a championship. Now, that makes the most sense for LeBron James long term, as far as to build toward a championship the next 2-3 years, to get his family in a good spot, to further his post basketball career. It's the Lakers. Like, he wants to be like Kobe Bryant. He wants to be global. And if you're going to be that way, if you're going to do that, you're going to do that in the entertainment capital of the world, where he has a home in Beverly Hills. He already has a home out there. Mm-hmm. So it makes the most sense to be with the Lakers.
But you've already got two really good teams to go through in the West.
Right.
And
that's, but Golden see, that's State from a Houston. Long-term thing. Like, yeah. Like you're going to get, if the Lakers have, can offer two max guys, can they swing LeBron James and Paul George? Can they swing LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard with trade? What's working out that way? You know, it's – but for a five-year plan, it's the Lakers. For a let's win now or maybe next year, it's the 76ers.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Brian Windhorst, the guy who's covered LeBron mm-hmm. forever for ESPN the other day. And he talked about Philadelphia, and I mean, what he said makes some sense, because you're talking about Ben Simmons and LeBron are basically the same position. Simmons is not a good jump shooter.
Awful.
So what's his role in that whole thing? And you're already heavily invested in him. And then he was talking about how Joel Embiid essentially becomes kind of like Chris Bosh down in Miami. It's like, go stand in the corner and wait for something to happen, because LeBron's got to be able to drive through the lane. So what do you do to make those other pieces really fit if LeBron
Well, that's the case anywhere he goes. That's why I cannot fathom him going to possibly Houston.
Right.
Two ball dominant guys as it is with Chris Paul and James Harden. Chris Paul would have to take a pay cut. He's the president of the NBA Players Association. The president of the NBA Players Association is not taking a pay cut. Okay.
Good point.
And so I don't see it working for Houston. So it's
how much sense does staying in Cleveland make?
None. Not if he wants to win.
Right.
That's going to give him the most money.
But doesn't staying in the East somewhere make the most sense?
I don't know
what they can do to rebuild that thing in Cleveland because it's been torn down and built back up.
Right.
Looking at, you know, you talked about Jeff Van Gundy earlier. I mean, he had the comment of the of the season the other night about the Cavs are like the Cavs have more eye rolls than a couple in a bad marriage.
They do. And that was a great line. He's like, they give more eye rolls to one another than a couple in a bad marriage. And they do. Like, it's like some nights they look really good and some nights they're just like, how did they expect this team to get back to the finals?
Yeah.
You know, with J.R. Smith, with the three, like Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, and Rodney Hood. You had three pretty decent players in the Western Conference,
and they're doing nothing.
And they're on the side of a milk carton in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Like Larry Nance Jr. was really good with the Lakers. Now he can't play. He can't get off the bench in Cleveland. So
it's because J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson are apparently best friends with LeBron, so he keeps them around. So you've got good players taking subservient roles because they're not good enough friends.
And how'd that work out for J.R. Smith the other day? How many points? You and I made as many baskets as J.R. Smith game two.
That's right.
So you can, and this will be a summer topic of, okay, now as soon as the Cavs are eliminated, and it might be next week, what's LeBron James going to do?
Can they come back? Do you think they can come back and win it?
No, they're not going to win it. They'll make it competitive, but you have to get a game in Boston. And as well as they played, look at what they did the other night. As well as LeBron James did, he's got 21 points in the first quarter, and they fold on the stretch because it basically is, let's give the ball to LeBron James, and can somebody else make a shot? That's what we talked about earlier. Every time the Celtics need a big shot, they're making a big shot. I can't say the same for Cleveland. Anytime someone needs to make a big shot, like Kyle Korver, wide open three, you're on the floor for one reason. Make an open shot. He can't make an open shot.
Right.
They're not getting past Boston.
All right. Quick one here for you. ESPN and Netflix, they're going to air a 10-hour documentary on Michael Jordan. Is 10 hours too much?
No, it's not enough. I think it's the full spectrum of Michael Jordan and the six rings that they won with the Chicago Bulls. Like, there's a lot there. If
you're right about that. I mean, there's a lot just getting to the finals and then, like you said, the encompassing all the six championships, going to baseball and the whole thing.
If the Lakers and Celtics, and I was a big Lakers-Celtics guy in the 80s, if that warrants, what, 5.5 hours?
Is that what it ended up
being? It was either 5.5 or 6.
Man.
But if it was a three-part, 5.5 hour, 6 hour series with the Lakers and the Celtics,
and it was
Michael
good.
Jordan, yeah, and Michael Jordan, the Bulls absolutely deserve 10 hours.
Okay.
And I'm watching that the first night it comes out.
I can buy that. Take a time out. Back to wrap up Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat right after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Winding down Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We're brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartandVascular.org, by Blackthorn Golf Club, and by Lavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks CY at LavittInsurance.com. Along with South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy, I'm Sean Stiers. Got about a minute left, Tom.
Jamie Gertz.
We were talking in the break about Jamie
Less than
Gertz.
Zero.
And of course,
Lost Boys.
You watched Seinfeld, right?
Absolutely.
Can you spare a square? The famous bathroom episode with Elaine.
Yep.
I don't have a square to spare.
No square to spare.
She is the wife of
one of the minority owners of the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah.
Kind of out of place standing between Josh Jackson and De'Aaron Fox for the top three of the NBA draft lottery picks.
And you could tell they had no idea who she was either.
Who's this lady? She was the only woman.
Why are you standing here
with a bunch of tall men that have like Mitch Kupchak and Jamie Gertz? Oh well.
Phoenix Suns get the number one pick, and we're about what, 5 weeks away from the draft. So I'm sure you'll be back before then.
I hope so.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
You got it.
Tom Noy, and we will wrap up Budweiser's weekday sports beat. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Darren Pritchett will join us from Fort Wayne. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, WSB.